This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me are Tan Chung Han and Brian Fernandez, also in the mix this morning. Brian, we have stories around the theme of transport. We have both cars and planes. No buses, no trains. Just cars and planes this morning. Let's begin with two brands, one in the premium sector and one in the mass market sector, and they both announced record sales.
Yeah, so let's start with Mercedes-Benz at the luxury end of the business. They basically achieved record sales of over 12,000 vehicles sold last year. Now, their sales were up 2.3% against the previous years of 11,779. Now, they are, in fact, the market leader in the luxury space, and they have 2.3% of the overall market.
So over in the mid-market segment, you got Honda Malaysia recording total sales of just over 109,000 units. First time a non-national carmaker has breached that 100,000 mark. Higher sales in the history of Honda Malaysia since it was established in 2003 and solidifying their spot in second place, second largest market share and the highest for a non-national automaker. Obviously, first is Perodua.
Okay, you know, what is fascinating is the question of who is buying this so-called mid-market or mass-market cars. You know, we talked about it, you know, in terms of the M40 as opposed to the T20. I think it's the T20, isn't it?
T20 is Mercedes, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, it might be actually the T1 who are buying the Mercedes and the rest, because the T20 is a range, right? I think even a Honda might be in a T20 rather than in an M40, but that's my speculation.
No, I mean, you got some models that like the Honda Cities and the Honda Jazzes that are very, very much in the M40 segment.
What do they cost? I mean, on average?
High 60s to about 90,000 in that range.
Right. Okay. You know, and we had the group vice president of Honda Malaysia on the Breakfast Grill early last year, and he spoke about the target demographic for the average Honda Malaysia customer, that being those who are choosing an upgrade or wanting an upgrade from the Protons and the Produas here. You know? So if, let's say, you think the Protons and Produas are perhaps for the lower M40 or the top part of the B40, then those looking for an upgrade, that's who Honda Malaysia goes after.
Well, this is fascinating because it must be a problem for both Proton and Produa to be thought of as the step in the other direction, right? So you go from them to something else. I mean, they don't have something to give their customers who want to upgrade.
Which is down to the price point, or plain and simple, right?
But Perodua is really upping their game because with the launch of the Myvi, they actually have features which much more expensive cars don't have. So those So now that takes, and the upper end of the segment of the Myvi, take them into the battleground in right smack in terms of the Honda Jazz, for example.
Mm. Okay. Or the Vios even, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay, we in fact recently had on The Breakfast Grill Dr. Amina Rashid Saleh, CEO and President of Perodua. He spoke about the change in demographics for the Perodua customer.
We are seeing some shift. There seems to be less of what we call the FTBs, the first-time buyers. We are beginning to see more of the additional car buyers, replacement car buyers. And because of this, in terms of what we call the demographics of the customers, seems to be a little bit different. We think it's a combine of factors. One, it could be disposable income. Secondly, it's because they have other alternatives. We recognize that public transportation is a challenge to us. You know, the emergence of, you know, Ubers, the Grabs and the likes are competitors in a way. But we would like to look at how we can be part of that rather than competing, how we can complement each other.
Now that was Dr. Amina Rashid Saleh, CEO and President of Perodua.
Yeah, so let's look at the overall market. Now, according to global research and consulting firm Frost & Sullivan, the overall total vehicle sales for 2017 should reach around 589,000. And they project, in fact, a small increase of 1.6% to 2% in 2018.
Yeah, right. 589,000, just slightly below the MAA's target of 590,000, still below that psychologically important 600,000 mark, right, which we have breached, you know, in recent years.
So that's a kind of particularly corporate perspective on the question of cars, right? I mean, sales and reaching those targets. targets. But there's other perspectives, especially in the age of, you know, environmental change and climate change, and you know, and the fact that cars use fossil fuels and we're burning through them. So we're just adding, I understand, to the current car population. We're not actually taking the old cars off the road. How does this affect pollution standards? How does this affect safety standards?
So here's that's a very interesting point, Sharad, because since the early 2000s, the auto industry actually has been lobbying the government to introduce an end-of-life vehicle policy. So in order to... Okay, on one hand, of course...
It's very good for themselves.
Good for them, yes, exactly. But on the other hand, also, there are safety issues, and also to... because are these older cars roadworthy and safe enough to be on the roads in the first place? Are they being maintained and inspected? The other thing is also the car population is aging very dramatically. So if you look at, for example, in 2006... there were actually 2.7 million vehicles that were aged 10 years or more. Now, in 2000 and... according to a recent Maybank research analysis, they estimate now that apparently there are 3.3 million cars which are more than 10 years old on the road today.
Right, so obviously having that end of life policy for these vehicles would spur more sales in the industry. But the question here is, looking at it from a socio-economic perspective, right, can the average Malaysian afford to keep up with that mandated pace of change? As we have just heard from the Perodua CEO, well, guess what? The affordability, you know, that seems to have eroded due to a confluence of factors. On top of that, you've got Bank Negara, who have imposed more stringent higher purchase loans. So even Perodua has had to manage their price points, move it up, you know, the price point chain, so to speak, you know, because the typical Perodua customer in the past, they are no longer given those higher purchase loans.
Okay, speaking of the end of life vehicle proposals, I mean, just because Brian was sounding like he was reaching at the end of his life, we're just talking about this cash or clunkers scrappage scheme which they had in 2015. It's resurfaced. It's one of those schemes where the government has proposed, there's been pushback on it, they tweak it a little bit, there's been pushback. What has it landed us, Brian, at this point in time?
So essentially now, the Cash for Clunker scheme, Sharad, was something that was proposed in 2015, where essentially you would be given 5,000 ringgit as a voucher or a rebate on a new car if you traded in your old jalopy that was probably 30 years old.
Jalopy?
Yeah.
So your old expression is that?
It's an old car.
It's an old car, yeah. So that proposal never saw light of day. Subsequently, Datuk Sri Mustafa Mohamad, our international trade and industry minister, said that the market was just not ready at that point of time. According to the Malaysian Reserve, he's now said that the government is not looking to introduce an end-of-life policy at this point of time.
Jalopy still sounds like a candy, though. It's like, hey, no, can I have a can of jalopies or something?
It's a proper word, jalopy. Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it's spelled J-A-L-O-P-Y. Okay. Now, okay, let's move from cars and zoom straight up into the stratosphere. Malaysian Airports Holding Berhad has just announced its passenger numbers for 2017. They're record numbers, and this despite its drop in global airports rankings.
Yeah, so the rankings are obviously going while grading them in terms of the state of the infrastructure, the facilities and services and whatnot. But in terms of sheer passenger traffic, at all 39 airports improved 8.5% on year to breach 96 million. 96 million. So international passenger movements that saw double digit growth, up 14% on year. Domestic traffic still seeing growth there, over 3% on year growth.
Yeah, so MAHB said that this is the second highest increase in absolute passenger numbers that has been achieved in the last 20 years, mainly driven by the international sector. So in fact, the first time international traffic has in fact exceeded domestic traffic. Now, across all its airports, including Turkey, passenger numbers grew about 8% to just under 128 million passengers for 2017. Now, that's the highest number of passenger movements it's ever achieved.
I guess the question always when we see these numbers is why these numbers, what the why is behind these numbers, but also whether then it's sustainable. I mean, can you still take those same factors going forward?
Well, I would think that at least from the international passenger side, the weaker ringgit, which was a prevalent theme in 2017, and that had some part to do with it. But on the domestic side, though, I think that's healthy, right? Because it still shows that Malaysian travellers still have the willingness and ability to pay for those flights, right? Be it for cuti-cuti Malaysia, cuti-cuti abroad, or worky-worky, like you've always described it.
T20,
what about more? Is the T20 growing, though? Yeah. Or are they taking more trips, right?
Yeah, Sharad? I think those international numbers are also fueled by the global phenomena of the Chinese tourists. So we've actually, not because we were particularly good at attracting them, but just by sheer numbers, we've been attracting a lot of Chinese tourists. So last year, we were projected to have a total number of tourists of something in the region of 31.8 million, according to Tourism Malaysia. And I think out of that, almost more than 10% were attributed to Chinese tourists.
I must say that there are things that attract the Chinese tourists to Malaysia. The durians, for sure. A lot of the confectioneries. And the fact that we're so polite.
Well,
generally speaking.
Yeah, I was going to say. Okay. Don't make me point fingers in the studio.
Can we talk about the rankings now, apart from the numbers? It's always painful when we talk about rankings, but never mind. How do we compare to Singapore? I hate to ask, but you know we need to do that.
Yeah. Well,
how do we compare to Changi? It's got four terminals now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I love Changi. I love it every time I fly into Changi. It's just so, what's the word? Welcoming and convenient. Yeah. Okay. So KLIA ranked
such friendly people. Yeah. Mostly Filipinos, I think, yeah, working in Changi. Yes.
And they've got a lot of touchscreens now, so that takes away the whole human element. But KLIA ranked 34th for 2017, compared to 24th in 2016. Obviously, at Changi, they're in top spot, so that's where we are.
And they used to be. KLI used to be ranked as high as fourth position in 2008. So we've had a lot of slippage.
So the question is why? What is it that is the challenge for MHB at this point in time?
Well, some might argue that there's not enough spent on upgrading its facilities, or at least what has been spent is not keeping pace with the rest of the world. You know, there have been reports out there whereby, you know, the airports in Hong Kong, obviously in Changi, all around the Middle East, they are spending huge amounts to upgrade their facilities and expand capacity. And the home base of Emirates Airlines certainly doing that. Now, here at MHB, we are spending, and I believe we have some numbers, but the question here is whether it's enough to keep pace with the rest of the world.
Yeah, so MHB is projecting a 30% rise in CapEx over the next 3 years as it embarks on a program really to address this issue, to refurbish and upgrade the airports in Malaysia. They exceeded the capacity of KLIA in 2016 with 25 million passengers.
Very quickly, didn't the MHB managing director, Balisham Ghazali, kind of push back on this ranking number?
Yeah, he also said that if you look at other matrices, KLIA has done well. It is, for example, ranked number 7 in the world for best airport staff and tops, interestingly enough, for airport immigration service.
And also, to be fair, you know, it's one thing for the Singaporean government to invest all in just Changi alone, and likewise in the Middle East countries, they've got one airport, whereas MHB, they got 39. So, you know, there
domestic
is
airports.
Yeah, no, so spread out quite a bit there. Yeah. To be fair to them.
To be fair, though, you still love Changi more.
I do.
I know. Traitor. Okay, coming up, the news, and then we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.